We were talking about coded music earlier, and that reminds me again, Brad Schreiber, musicologist, historian, coming up tomorrow night talking about the history of protest music. But that song, Wooden Ships, from Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, that was coded. Remember we had a show that all night about famous, I think that was when Jason Heller was on, but we were talking about UFOs and sci-fi that had popped up in popular music. And in that song, Wooden Ships actually refers to UFO sightings. And it tells the story about the silver people coming out of the wooden ships. But clearly, you know, they kind of presented it in a different context. But I always stayed with me. Cool tune, too, of course. But only an hour left, so we're racking them up. We'll pick up where we left off, and we'll get to you if you get a line here open in the next 30, 40 minutes. I promise we'll get you on before the show is over on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Hey, if I can just take a second before we get back to open lines to say it's not okay to take out your frustrations on Miss Gina, who's answering the phones tonight. I understand you might want to talk about politics on Coast to Coast, but it's Friday night. Seems real kind of busy on every other show these days, politics being top of mind everywhere else. So I think it's cool to zig while the others zag. And I made that declaration, as I try to do all the time on open lines, because I just don't think that makes for a very fun night. And I'm not inclined to have those conversations. So I just think it's very ungentlemanly of anybody to get heated with her. That's the rules tonight. I hope you can live by them and find a show that, you know, if you need to, a podcast somewhere to blow off some steam on your political points of view, and don't take it out on her. And you all ought to play nice, because she doesn't come around very often. She's certainly not here enough. So I hope that that puts an end to that. And I don't believe that anybody who's getting on the air are getting on the air because they're being mean to her. So if you really want to get on the air, don't do that. That's never going to go well. And if I hear later on you've been mean to Gina or any of the people who are associated with this show, any of the frontline producers that are taking the calls or getting you on the air one way or another, I'm going to make sure that our conversations are all much shorter next time. Barry's in Rock Hill, South Carolina. I know he'll join me. Oh, I already got Barry. Let me get to Jim in Greenville, sorry, on Coast to Coast. And I know he'll join me in appreciating Miss Gina on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Jim.
Yes, Miss Gina's always nice. I don't Isn't know she? Why anyone would speak badly to her.
There you go.
All right. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
We're on codes. You know, in the 1800s, there weren't any dryers, so people would hang their laundry out on the lines.
Right.
What they figured out was they would hang quilts, and they could sew patterns into the quilts. The patterns would give directions for the Underground Railroad.
I didn't know that.
And let them know what direction and whether or not the house was safe.
I love that. Never heard that.
Intricate patterns. There was a display locally here in a museum, and it was just a fascinating bit of information and history.
I love that. In fact, I do know about some of the other codes for people who are riding the rails, and I did a show on this a long time ago about those kind of secrets, but I'd never heard that about the hanging quilts. It doesn't surprise me, but I like, isn't that cool? Like, how did that get passed along? Like, how did that even get pre-internet? Nobody was putting out a book on how to do it. So, you know, that's all word of mouth, which is pretty extraordinary in and of itself. Thank you, Jim, for hanging on for that. West of the Rockies, Carrie is in Nevada on Coast to Coast. Carrie?
Hello. Thank you for taking my call, Ian.
Thank you.
So in order to not get too nervous, I'd like just to speak with you slowly.
Okay, good.
I want to appreciate your candidness and your beliefs when people talk about your spiritual beliefs.
Thank you.
So I am a 40-year Bible-believing Christian.
There you go.
I don't believe that you can pick and choose what you want to believe in the Word of God. You either believe it all or you don't believe any of it. It's not about a religion for me. It's about a relationship. and I have a deep relationship with the Lord.
Well, that's good.
For about 2 years now, I've been listening to Coast to Coast pretty much 90% of the time every night, and I'm very compelled by your guests that are on. And so my question for you is there any conflict between being a Christian and believing in astrology or mediums, who I just listen to, and I feel like these people, they know what they're doing, and it's not a hoax? And so how do you bring that together into the Christian belief?
Okay, so let's back up for a second. I don't start where you start, so I am not hampered by the concept that you have to, that everything has to be exactly as we perceive it as being true, or none of it is true. There's a kind of fundamentalistness of that that I've never subscribed to. It wasn't how I was raised in the way in which I interface with the Bible. So I look to the Bible for truth, but I'm not necessarily worried about fact. And so truth means that when I'm reading, I always read for the original context of things. So what did they mean when they wrote it? And what is it that we take away from it today? So I say that to you because I don't know that this is helpful, but I'll try. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily believe in a lot of things other than my faith. I have a very short list of things that I believe in. I will entertain, and I will be informed by, and I will enjoy conversations around things that seem really extraordinary and cool, like, for example, a medium. But I don't ever go down the path of belief. So I never put that in the same category as I would put my faith. Does that help?
Yes, absolutely. That helps a lot. Because I feel these things when I'm listening to them, and I feel like this is a valid track. I mean, these people are talking, and I am listening and hearing and thinking, you know, it's okay to go there, Terry, but, you know, you can't believe anything that maybe the Bible wouldn't want you to believe in. Like you're saying, you have a short list. And, you know, I believe in Jesus. I'm certainly no learned scholar of the Word, been through the Bible several times.
Right.
But I never want to push anything out the door simply because it doesn't seem like it's reasonable to believe that along with the Bible.
Okay, and so we get into something like... Yeah, astrology, though, is a really interesting thing because there was a kind of Hebraic astrology, and there was a numerology of the period we would refer to from, you know, a Christian perspective, of the Old Testament. And there is a kind of numerology that exists to this day in the Bible. It's a different kind, I think, that people actually think of, but astronomy per se was a very limited concept. So what we would look at as being science today about astronomy, that was harder to find. And instead, they were always looking for signs in the stars. They were always looking for signs in nature of God's intent. And that's something we might be more inclined to think of as being in the kind of esoteric arts, or what some people think of as the dark arts. But to somebody from the first century, that would have been completely natural. And that wouldn't have been in conflict with their faith per se.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, okay.
So, I mean, but this is where, and I would tell you, so again, I'm not a fundamentalist in the sense that I don't look for hard lines. I find the best part about reading the Bible are all the dotted lines in between things. And that's what I love to explore. And that's what I spend much of my week doing for one subject or another. So hopefully that's helpful and informative, and we can move on from there. But that is the nature of open lines too, because I never know what's going to happen next. Wildcard line, Lynn is in Vancouver on Coast to Coast. Lynn?
Hi there. Thanks so much for taking my call. I'd like to say that I guess we're the Canadian bacon for
yes.
the UFO whistle stop appetizer for their dinner.
The appetizer, I like to think that. That'll be good.
And,
scream loudly.
Couldn't resist. Anyway, my story tonight is kind of on the same vein about animals and stuff.
Sure.
Because I was very intrigued by the first guest and amazing about his name and everything. It was just almost magical, you know.
Isn't he great? I love him.
You know, you know, names sometimes we become what our names are type thing.
Right.
You know?
Isn't that funny? Yes, I agree.
The donkey.
Right.
Anyway, so this story is about camping in Florida, and it's about 40 years old. So this happened 40 years old, and I just want to preface that meant that I was young, athletic, and I could actually do the physical sport of cycling and camping in Florida for several weeks
at a time. Yeah.
Oh, and it just makes me cough when I think what we did. So, it's like I get a little choked because
I get that.
It was one of those adventures, you know, it was two couples. We met another couple that we knew very well back at home. They were cycling. They flew down with their bicycles, and then we drove down with our bicycles in the car. And then we camped. You know, we met them up.
Sure.
We met them up and met up with them and, you know, began our adventures. Anyway.
Where did you start?
We were in the St. Petersburg area.
Okay, good.
The west side, Sanibel Island.
Right.
And so where I'm going to go with this, though, is Fort Myers. And I apologize to all the people that know camping in Florida very well and all the Floridians, but I can't remember the name of the wildlife sanctuary that's near Fort Myers that's very exclusive. You have to have a reservation. They only let 100 campers in at a night, any given night. And so our buddies were there before us, so they managed to get a reservation. So it worked out. So we had one night in this place. So, you know, 100 campers all in this circle, and then you're surrounded by thousands of acres of this wildlife sanctuary that was just incredible by day.
Right.
But that particular night, it was a full moon, and so we decided to go for a bike ride because it was, you know, it's so bright on a full moon. Now, we weren't going to go far, and the other woman, she wasn't too keen about it. I wasn't too keen. But while we geared up, the one fellow, not my boyfriend, the other boyfriend, he started doing this weird thing because the raccoons started to descend. As soon as it got dark, they started to descend and scavenge at all the campers.
Right.
And I'm talking hundreds.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Raccoons.
Would not surprise me.
And we were in pup tents and everybody else had campers. So the point was, we're the stupid Canadians, and we're gearing up. But for some reason, he was getting a spoonful of butter, holding out, you know, the big cooking spoon, the raccoon would come up to, you know, investigate, and then he would try and kick it in the head.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Now, this started to really, like, this bothered me immediately.
Yeah.
As with the girlfriend. And we didn't know if anybody else was watching, but we didn't care. All three of us were kind of going, buddy, what are you doing?
Yeah, really?
Cool, right?
Right.
So he did this a couple of times, and I kind of chalked it up. Maybe he had too much beer, and somehow they managed to get a big chunk of black hash, and he had it stashed in a Toblerone bar in his tent, and, you know, perhaps he was in there too. So the point being, we go for this ride. Well, we don't go very far. We go over a bridge, and we stop for a moment to look over the bridge. Well, there's a whole bunch of alligators, and I've seen alligators before. Okeefenokee Swamp, there's a huge 100-year-old alligator there. You know, I've seen the golf courses, blah, blah, blah. So, but we're all looking over the bridge into this stream, whatever, where they're all hanging out. It's a full moon. They're enjoying it, too. Well, what does this guy start doing? But start throwing pebbles over, trying to hit them on the nose. Well, that was it. The girlfriend and I kind of went, that's not cool.
Right.
Stop doing that. La, la, la. At that moment, there was a blood-curdling screech from somewhere in the wildlife sanctuary very close by to where we were. And within seconds of that screech, a black panther zipped across the road. And, of course, the other girlfriend and I, we were just going, that's it, we're gone. And we just said, we're going back. And we started gunning it. Like, I mean, gunning it on our bikes back to the campground. As we turned the corner into the campground, a 12-point buck literally jumped in front of our bikes.
Wow.
Now, we were probably going about 35 miles an hour. We were that terrified. And so brake, I mean, we almost crashed. I mean, that's how close this thing was. So we were just like freaking, the two girls, you know, us two. So we go back, of course, we get back to the campground. Now get this, his tent was destroyed. Like the raccoons had opened
the guy
up.
Who'd been mean to the raccoons, tent.
So they had literally skipped all of her stuff, didn't touch my stuff or my boyfriend's stuff. The only stuff they went through was this guy's stuff. And they were soon behind us, and he came running in, saw what was going on, because we were shaken. We were like going, that's just too much nature for us.
Yeah, really.
And what's the matter with your boyfriend? Like, what's he doing?
Exactly.
And he goes jumping into the tent, and he comes out with the Toblerone bar going, they didn't get the hash. Now fast forward the next day. We're at a different campground. We're talking a good 30 miles away, right? We're at another campground. We go out for a bike ride. Guess what happens when we come back? All his stuff was gone through, and they got the hash.
Wow.
And I don't know how those raccoons found him.
Well, you got to say this, of all of the animals that you mentioned in the story, the only one that was really a threat to you was that guy with the hash. He was the guy who was stirring up all the trouble and no fun to be around. The other animals, in their own way, were actually being kind of respectful.
They weren't. This is the wonderful case of what I call collective animal intelligence.
Right.
Like, I mean, this is a wildlife sanctuary, and those animals have to put up with humans every night, albeit only 100. But look, every once in a while, you're going to get a toxic freak like this guy.
Yeah.
I've got to say, when I ended that relationship about a year later, I was gone. And so I would never have to see that guy again, which was kind of nice. But it was just, to this day, I mean, I've done a lot of camping in Canada and the States and elsewhere, and I'm telling you, that was one of the most extraordinarily bizarre evenings of human idiocy I've ever seen.
Right. You know what? It's interesting about that, too, is people always say that before you marry somebody, you should go camping together, travel with them. It will reveal the most about the other person, and in fact, it'll tell you whether or not you've bonded. I will tie that back to even to the Bible, where Mary and Joseph were traveling. It was not uncommon for people before they were married to travel together, partly to discover whether or not that the community had made a match, a proper match. So good, you lived that out in real time, and I appreciate your time in telling the story too, like coast to coast. So have a wonderful night. It does remind me too, about the black hash reminds me that, remember we had Ken Hansen on, our friend Ken Hansen from University of Central Florida, and he had a book. We were talking about his book involving some mysteries of the Bible, and one of those things I was holding him to was this story about what I've always heard is that one of the Hebrew words for the herbs used in the Holy of Holies in the temple is essentially the same word that's used for marijuana. And that whether or not this hallucinogenic had been used in biblical times, he found that very controversial. Remember when we had him on, he's like, I don't want to say that. Don't make me say that. But of course we made him say that. But that story's been reconfirmed this week. There was another story about that it was a kind of hash resin that's been associated with the Holy of Holies. Just telling you what the science is finding these days. All right, more open lines coming up next. Be nice to Gina on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. All right, there you go. We had a fun show tonight from the very beginning, talking with Tim Banal about the big stories of the week, and then talking about this cool podcast that iHeartMedia has put out called Dear Governor, about a guy who's been on death row for decades, who just seemingly there's no evidence to support it. It's an interesting case of justice, but it's a wonderful podcast. And then Jeremy Wade, and that sort of drove all of the bumpers tonight to be talking about the mysteries of the deep, the mysteries of who is coming up next in open lines coming up in just a moment. But a reminder there isn't a gentleman in among you if anybody is being mean to Gina on the phone. So be nice to the person who's answering the phones. Nobody gets on the air if they lie, which I hate more than anything when people say they're going to talk about one thing, but then they end up, as soon as they get on the air, they reroute the conversation somewhere else. This isn't the night for politics. It's a Friday night. Let's have a little fun. Coming up next on Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. Well, let's get as many as we can before the top of the hour. David is in Venice, Florida on Coast to Coast AM. David, you were being nice to Gina when you called, right?
Absolutely, and she's completely professional, and she sounds like a big sweetheart.
She is. She's been with the show for a very long time. So where do you want to take us?
Well, it was funny. I was out running a snook fishing charter tonight. We were actually talking about Jeremy Wade and river monsters.
How about that?
It was unbelievable. I came in to, I put the boat on the trailer. We caught some big snook tonight, and I put the boat on the trailer. And I tune into Coast to Coast like I always do. I'm washing the boat, and here's Jeremy Wade. And I'm like, no way.
Isn't that cool?
Oh, it was so cool. I was so excited trying to get through, but, you know, it didn't happen. But we were talking about when he went to down in the Rift Valley and was catching the giant Nile perch.
Right.
Unbelievable episode.
Right. Yeah, it's funny because, like, you put the word giant in front of a lot of things, and it's hard to imagine just how big some of those freshwater fish actually do get because they really are giants. They're giant. They're just enormous, but, yeah.
Absolutely, and it was just, it was so cool to listen to that, and then, you know, the guy had already pulled away from the parking lot, so he didn't get to hear the fact that Jeremy was on as a guest, and, you know, I was just like, wow, you know, tuning in, and I got so sidetracked while I was watching the boat, but I kept listening and be waiting on hold. But real quick, on a given evening, how many millions of people are listening to this show?
That's a good question. You know, the as of last report, and I don't want to underestimate, because I think the coolest thing about it is during the week, there's a higher number of affiliates and then a higher number of listeners. So on any given night, it would depend whether it was a weeknight or a weekend night. But the last number I heard when I asked was 3 to 5 million.
Wow, that's impressive. Not to change the subject real quick, I'm sure you've watched it. What was your take or your feeling of the show, Project Blue Book?
I love the actors that were involved. You're talking about the fictional version, the semi-fictional version they did on History Channel?
Yeah.
Yeah. I liked it. I thought it was great. I mean, I thought it was really interesting. I know they took a lot of liberties with the history of it in order to make it as compelling as they did, but I enjoyed it quite a bit. I haven't finished watching the series. I'm not up to date on it, but I watched all of the first season, and I was upside down in it for a while because I thought it was that well done. How about you?
Well, I loved it, and they actually, at Project Blue Book, History Channel canceled it. Now there's a petition on Facebook to bring it back.
Oh, really? I didn't know. I hadn't heard.
Yeah, on Facebook, there's a petition to bring Project Blue Book back on in another network, and it's
oh, yeah.
Cool. You do such a great job. You've got such an incredible personality.
Well, it's nice of it. I think you manifested Jeremy Wade, as the young people would say. You manifested that by talking about it tonight. That's why it happened.
It blew my mind. But back in '97, I actually witnessed the UFO down here. Actually, well, in Venice. I'm in Sarasota now, driving home. But in Venice, actually, we witnessed one. The guy tugged on my sleeve, and he goes,
yep.
"Dave, what's that?" And I go, "I don't know. But I don't think it's ours."
Well, you'd be amongst many people in Florida who did, David. So, yeah, good. And I appreciate that. We've got a couple of people I'll get to before the top of the hour, but really enjoyed talking with you. Let me get to Walt in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Walt, you were being nice to Gina, weren't you, Walt?
Yes, I was. Hey, if you want me to, I'll fly out to L.A. and kneel down and kiss her toes one by one. How's that?
I'm not sure that would be something she would enjoy. I believe that might not be proper social distancing, but I'm sure she appreciates the spirit of the offer, nonetheless.
Well, from what you say, she's a real looker, so I don't think
she is.
Anyway, your salutation line is Deus te amat, and so do I, which in Latin means God loves you, and so do I. Now, by Deus, from what you say to people, I think it's fair to say that by Deus, you don't necessarily mean Yahweh, Jehovah, the God of the Bible.
Why?
Because, you know, obviously...
No, don't. You're wrong. You're 100% wrong. So why would you say that?
Well, you know, if you read the Bible, if you take it literally, I mean, Yahweh Jehovah, as I humorously said to George and a guest one night, I mean, Yahweh Jehovah has the morals of Hitler.
No.
He's a genocidal racist ogre. He destroys the innocent with the evil, the children with the sinners, whether it's the Great Flood or Sodom and Gomorrah, the Passover story, sending the angel of death down to kill the firstborn of Egypt, and even when the Israelites are liberated from Egypt and they come into the land of the promised land of milk and honey, he tells them that they can smite and enslave the Canaanites.
Let me just stop for a second. I appreciate the need you feel to give me a lecture on the Bible, but if you're going to talk about it, let's be clear. It's our perception of God that shifts. So if you're saying God, there's a different God here, then the other person's not it's not the same Godhead as over there. That's the error. So what we have in the Bible is we have a progression of thought, which from the earliest days of the understanding of God, as we talked about actually on a Coast to Coast show not that long ago with Bart Ehrman and his book about heaven and hell, is that the original idea was very clearly God says, I do everything. Everything good or bad that happens to you, you live at my whim. But then the children of Israel, after the diaspora, after they've been, you know, sort of spread out, they pick up on other perceptions of God, and their perception of God, the same God, changes. And now then that's really where we start getting into much more of the dichotomy of good and evil, and that it's God that's responsible for all the good stuff, and they start elevating this concept of a Satan character, of the devil is responsible for the bad things. So, I mean, that's what we see in the Bible. So it's not a separate God of Israel and that one's a sadist or a racist or whatever. It's just that's how it's perceived. And that's kind of the beauty of the Bible, is that we can read that and we can see this shift, this very natural shift as we all go through life. We often change our opinions from when we're 15 to when we become 55. We're still the same person. Right? You're not a totally different person. You're still the same person. You just think differently. So with that in mind, did you have a larger point you wanted to make?
Well, in ancient times, as I often say to George, you know what I mean? When the Bible was written, there were no telescopes, no microscopes. There was really no science. And most importantly, there was no science of psychology. So in the ancient mind, they would personify aspects of the human psyche. They would personify the good with God and personify the evil part of our psyche with the devil or Satan, etc.
Right.
So as I, you know what I mean? It's obvious that all of these gods, whether it's Yahweh, Jehovah, or...
Wait. There's no Yahweh or Jehovah. So Jehovah is a mispronunciation of Yahweh. So it's, you know, and in that way, Yahweh was not that's not the word we're ever supposed to use. And in fact, I'll wrap up with you by saying that this is one of the reasons why. So theology just means words about God, right? And you're discussing theology. I'm throwing in my opinion on that, but we all do theology. It doesn't necessarily make it good theology, but we all do it. Even when we're saying, you know, things like a God doesn't exist, we're still doing theology. But the point of that is to say God didn't want that. And why the commandment is, you know, do not take my name in vain is just for these kinds of conversations. And especially when we get the word that should never be said is the word that you are repeating. And I will say it again just for the record, is we're adding a pronunciation to Yahweh, to what is otherwise not to be a name that was supposed to ever have been said, because it reflected how little we understand that if we take that directive literally, God was saying, stop trying to define me, just go with it. And I think that's what I do in a lot of my theology. I don't worry about trying to settle everything. I just try to look for what's informative as opposed to what's definitive. But as far as my closure is concerned, Deus Tiamat, I say that because when I was working at a market, the boss would not allow me to say the word God on the air because he didn't like that. He didn't want to hear somebody say God. He wanted to hear people talk about, you know, sex and other stuff. And so whenever I said it, I'd say it in Latin. That's how I picked it up. All right, let me go to Louise in Louisville. And I'm hoping you're one of the people who are nice to Gina tonight. Right, Louise?
Oh, I love all of you all. I've been with you from the very beginning.
Amy. Yay.
For years. Okay, what I want to talk about is the mist, the monsters of the deep.
Yeah.
Because Cleopatra, you know, I always talk about Cleopatra.
I know you do. You find a way to tie Cleopatra to anything.
Everything, so, because I love Cleopatra. I love her personality. She was me. I was her. Okay, but she loved fishing. And she went down Abu Simbel with Julius Caesar, where after he was killed, she had a fishing trip with Mark Antony. And with Mark Antony, they were on the Mediterranean. That's where they were fishing at the time. And he was having problems catching fish, so he had one of his men jump into the river and take one of the fish and hook it onto the line. Cleopatra knew that he did that. So she had one of her people take a salted fish and go down and hook it on the line. So when Mark Antony pulled it in, everyone fell out laughing. Now, this is a true story. It was in Stacy Schiff's book, Cleopatra of Life, with 100 references at the end. Zawi Hawass was one of the people who reviewed the book. But everyone just laughed about Cleopatra letting Mark Antony. And she said to Mark Antony, she said, "General, you don't need to be fishing for this trash." She called it trash. She said, "Your job is fishing for nations and countries." And he did, and he gave Cleopatra a lot of countries. And Cleopatra had 7 million people under her when she died.
How about that? Wonderful way to end the night. We've got a couple other people to get to before the top of the hour. Dan is in Naples, Florida, on Coast to Coast AM. Dan?
Hey, I'm here. I didn't insult your young lady because I didn't know I was supposed to, so I didn't do it.
Good. Yeah, of course, you never should, right?
No, she sounded so nice. I told her I was going to talk to you about what happened to about where the flying saucers are coming from. I decided at my age, I am now 90, and I've been keeping this. I have never told my family or anybody this story. And when I was 9 years old, I used to make airplanes, the balsa airplanes, which was papered, and I flew it with a rubber band propeller. Do you remember those?
Yeah.
Before your time?
No, I remember.
Okay, and the neighbor, the son came over to say hello, and he saw me making airplanes, and he came back with a restricted book. He was captain of Canada Air Force, and he gave me the book to look at the different airplanes, and the last picture was a flying saucer.
Hmm.
And I was wondering, with your ability, could you dig up that Canadian book?
It's intriguing. Intriguing possibility.
It's amazing.
What year would that have been?
I think I'm not quite sure. I think I was 9. So
What year would it have been then? Sorry?
1939.
Well, I will I am curious, and I will check, and I will get to Turtle here east of the Rockies on Coast to Coast, cuz I think that's a really interesting idea. Maybe somebody grew up with that book who's listening still. Turtle is in, are you in Nebraska?
Yeah, still in Nebraska. I got two quick comments. I miss JC, and I have a river monster story that scared me away from water for many, many years.
Tell me.
My first comment is, in air quotes, all gifts are given by God, and the wise men made their way to the manger. I've lived in Fort Myers for over 30 years. I think that lady was talking about Babcock Ranch. The father died. The children have sold off all that property, and it's now a community. It's a real tragedy. We were all disappointed. I miss JC. But my river story comment is, I'm from a little small town in upstate New York called Fulton. and there is Oswego River connects Lake Ontario to Onondaga Lake, which is a sacred ground for the Onondaga Indians. So really something you should look into. It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
But walking across the lower bridge, there's two bridges that crossed. The city was divided. And they were railings. It was a very old bridge, so it was railings. So it was just like a, you know, like a house railing, right? You could look through. And I saw an eel that had to be at least 20 feet long, and it was swirling around in circles because it was caught up in the overflow. There was a series of locks, you know, to raise the water up and down,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And there was a washout, and it was trapped up into the washout. And I'd always stop there because it was really cool when the water would turn, and I'd sit there for hours watching the lock. And I saw it was a monster. I mean, this thing scared me. I mean, everything you could ever imagine. I never went near water for years and years after that. I was
and it was
like
an eel.
8 or 9 years old. It had to be an eel because it was long. It looked like an eel, and I am not exaggerating when it had to be at least 20 feet long, and it was swirling around almost like in a figure eight. And it is possible because it would have lived probably in Lake Ontario, really huge, right? So it had made its way up the river and it got caught in that lock, you know, washout area where it couldn't, you know, it had to turn around and go back. And I think it, you know, was a little confused in the area. But I was so scared. I was petrified holding on to the railing of the bridge. I couldn't move, and I didn't.
Yeah,
I didn't go near water for years after that. I mean, I was, you know, probably.
All right, no, I get it, And so, I grew up around Lake Michigan, and I know that there are eels in there. And I think, you know, roughly, you know, like a 3-foot eel would be considered a really large eel for fresh water. I know. And I think that, again, the more interesting question is whether that might connect somehow back to the St. Lawrence Seaway. And this might have been something from the Atlantic Ocean that had come in, and it either or a particular species that, again, because of the depths of those lakes, had made itself at home there already. But that's all the time we have. We're running out of time, and I want to make sure that we have Brad Schreiber plugged for tomorrow night, because that's going to be a great show, and David Mack in the first hour. And look, it's been a crazy week. There's a lot going on in the news. Let's just all take a big, deep breath, right? Going into the weekend, no matter where you are, most important things are being with family and being with friends and staying healthy, trying to avoid becoming a statistic or one of those ironic stories in the news. So, you know, even if you don't believe in masking, then make sure you distance, and let's not let this continue to spread, this whole COVID thing. Let's see if we can't reverse the trend back to lower death expectations between now and August, okay? And in the meantime, with all these other big stories that are breaking in the news, George will be back on Monday, and I know he'll be loving to talk about that. And it is just Deus, as in the Latin, Deus tuum. God loves you, and so do I.